Today on a special Rambling About Cars, you know, just another 800 horsepower Mercedes. Ugh. Thank goodness we have a returning guest who regale us all with stories of Radwood, the 80s, 90s car scene that we absolutely adore. So let's just roll, man. This is a good one. It's podcast time. I am Christopher Smith, Mr. Chris Bruce across the way. Who's with us today once again for the third time? Is it the third time?
I think so, yeah.
Mr. Brad Hand, I thought you were going to say his name. Sorry.
Oh, right.
Bruce, you do all the intros, man.
Well, you set it up. I figured you'd push it.
Knock it down.
No, we have Brad Hansen with us today.
great to be back.
I think you are our first, not from the Motor One team, in the three-timer club.
Nice.
Two times, but I think you're the first to be on three times as a guest. So We love having you. Happy you're back. Fantastic.
Happy to be here. Is there a special jacket that you get or something like
not
that?
Not yet.
No, that's the five timers club, and it's just going to be some flannel. Sorry, man. Great.
I'll take it.
Before we kick off into everything, there's a little bit of housekeeping I need to do real quick. For any of our frequent listeners, you will know last week we upset the YouTube gods, and about 22-ish minutes into the show, we went blank. Now, we were still streaming on Facebook and Twitter, and I know some of you found those streams.
We
fully appreciate that. It was fantastic of you guys to work around in chat and find it. I appreciate that. But the full episode is now on YouTube. It's fine. You can watch it. So if you missed last week's show and you know you were watching and it went blank and you didn't go on Facebook or Twitter or stuff like that, watch this show with us tonight, but then Friday night you're looking for something to watch, there's nothing on TV, you can pull up last week's Rambling About Cars and it's all there.
It is all there. Everything is plugged back in, and I mean, lesson learned, be a little cautious when you are sharing, and that's what we were doing. We were sharing, but we were talking over, we were narrating. At the time, that was number five trending on YouTube, so We caught some attention there, and that's fine. Great episode. Of course, we were sharing the Ken Block Gymkhana, his final Gymkhana Electrokhana 2. But everything is up there. Everything is cool with YouTube, and we are stoked to be here.
Yeah. And I will say, so on tonight's show, we're going to start out with just a little bit of actual pure car news. As Smith mentioned, there's a new Mercedes-Benz AMG SL that we want to talk about. And then we're going to get a little bit more rambly. We're going to talk to Brad about some Radwood stuff. We got a cheap car challenge, and I'll tell you folks now, in case you find a car that fits into it. Here are the rules. You have $10,000 to spend, but the vehicle must be right-hand drive. And it must be roughly Radwood appropriate. So, Brad, tell the people, what would you say roughly Radwood appropriate means?
Well, there is no roughly. It's actually pretty cut and dry. Radwood is for cars from 80s and 90s only. So anything made from 1980 to 1999, you're good. It can be a 1999. So anything that's 2000 and later, that's Litwood, as they say. That's too new. Anything before that's like groovewood or dadwood.
Now,
or...
actually, that's a good point. Let me Group FBC. Hey, right hand drive. Is this so normal for some of us? Okay, well, let's put a stipulation in there. If you are in a place like, say, Australia, where right hand drive is the norm, you have to find a left hand driver.
And also that $10,000, that's it. It's not like you can, unless you could figure out some way to buy a car in Japan and get it here for $10,000 all in, which I don't think is really possible. You got 10 grand to spend. So have
10
fun.
Grand to spend. And if you're catching us live, we're on Motor One YouTube, Motor One.com Facebook, Motor One.com Twitter. Jump into the comments, do a quick search, find your $10,000 right-hand drive Radwood machine. Dump it into the comments. We see all your comments. We can interact with you. It all comes back here to Command Central with us. And if you're listening on audio, we still love everybody on audio. We go up every Friday on Spotify, Apple, Google, Podchaser. I looked up a new one this week, Bruce. We're on Podchaser. Yeah, like a dozen different audio platforms. Email us, podcast@motorone.com. Say, hey, I found this cheap car challenge. I wanted to share it with you guys. Harf of Jar, a regular rambler, we just got your email today, and I want to apologize. It somehow got past us there towards the end of November.
Thing. We got your reply, because so we saw the images now, but
we got yeah, that.
We missed the original.
We're going to talk about that next week, because that is a cool find that you have. So yeah, folks, podcast@motorone.com. We love to interact and share these adventures with you. And speaking of adventures, that segue doesn't work at all, because is there anything adventurous about an 816 horsepower, rather small Mercedes convertible?
Dude, the SL is a pretty big convertible by all.
But it's when you think about it, I mean, when you take it in context, I mean, yeah, it's not a Miata, right? It's not a Miata. Yeah, it's not. But it's got a fairly small interior. It's just kind of a smallish two-door convertible roadster, whatever you want to call it. With 816 horsepower.
This is the new Mercedes AMG SL63 E-Performance. Deep breath. And yes, it is the most powerful SL ever offered to buyers. It, like you said, 816 horsepower. The torque figure is what I think is just stupidly hilarious. 1,047 pound-feet of torque.
Awesome. So, I mean, like, you can tow like an aircraft carrier?
Basically.
I mean, how would you feel if you're in Detroit right now with Ram or General Motors or Ford, and you're rubbing your hands together? We've got our class leading, you know, heavy duty diesel pickup truck that has 1,000 pound feet of torque. Yeah, my little convertible Mercedes has more.
I still don't like you calling this car little, but that's beside the point. Here are the specs: twin turbocharged 4-liter V8. Plus an electric drive unit. So the V8 totally by itself, let me double check this. I believe it's 612 horsepower. And then the electric motor is offering an additional 204 horsepower. The battery, though, it is only 6.1 kilowatt hours, which for anyone out there who is familiar with these things, that's a pretty tiny battery. And that means you can drive this thing purely electrically, but the range is 8 miles.
Yeah, it's like the other e-performance models.
Yeah,
it's a plug-in hybrid.
Corvette E-Ray. Yeah, like the Corvette E-Ray. It can only go like a few miles on pure electric. The electricity is for performance, not
efficiency.
Yeah, exactly.
And I mean, of course, we know there are many places around the world that are moving towards mandates where, you know, in some of the congested cities, you may have to pay a surcharge to drive just through the city. If you have a combustion engine, something like this, hey, if you got 8 miles of range, you might be able to kind of slip through the city. Yeah. You know, I mean, there's that aspect that's involved here too. But yeah, this is a performance application, not an efficiency application. No. And I mean, it does perform. Mercedes says 0 to 60 in 2.9 seconds, top speed, 197 miles an hour. I will say, top speed is what, like, what did I write down here? The regular, air quotes, the regular SL with only 577 horsepower, that goes 196. So you get an extra mile per hour, 0 to 60. I mean, it's a little quicker. I think the standard SL is like 3.5 seconds. This is 2.9. Lots of performance, of course, all-wheel drive. They change up the brakes a little bit. It's got bigger brakes, 16.5-inch rotors up front, 6-piston calipers, 15-inch rotors in the back. They tweak the SL's active aero. I think there's a little flap that kind of folds down at the front that helps suck it down once you get up to speed. Interior is SL, gorgeous.
Yeah, it's an
exterior SL, gorgeous. I mean, this
ton of power.
I mean, I think this is one of the best looking, I won't say it. This is one of the best looking convertibles. I won't say little. This is one of the best looking convertibles out there right now. I love the lines. I love the shape. Yeah. 816 horsepower. I know. I mean, Bruce, we've talked about it before. In fact, I think I remember talking about the SL43 saying, right. you know, is this really the one to have? Because that's what, 400 and some horsepower?
Correct.
It's not going to be slow. Stuff, right.
No, God, no. We do not have pricing yet. I think it is very safe to say that this is six figures, you know.
It's not just six figures. I mean, the regular SL is 188 grand.
Right. Well, that's why I say safe to say this is six figures.
this is probably like it, again, we don't have anything official. We don't know pricing, just speculating here.
But
if the regular SL is 188 grand, it's not a stretch to say this is 200. Yeah. And it could even be a step beyond that. 816 horsepower. When Mercedes drops something like this, you gotta pay a little attention, I guess.
Yeah, it's the most powerful SL ever, and that's a long lived name going back to, you know, the SLR race cars and the 300 SL gull wings and then the Pagoda bodies and et cetera, so. That's a long lived name to finally have. This is the most powerful album. But Brad, I want your take before we start talking about older cars. I want your take on this brand new car.
I mean, very, very cool for somebody. But honestly, this is not my there's a reason I like older cars. I don't think that you need I don't think you need 800 horsepower. That's just crazy. I feel like, you know, I will admit that. It does look much nicer than previous SLs have looked. I feel like the generation before this looked a little, I don't know, dumpy, and this looks kind of nice and sharp edged and minimalist. I like that. But you know, cars like this that are worth, you know, four times the average American income, and you know, at 800 horsepower and 1,000 pound feet of torque, and they probably weigh like 4,500 pounds, and you know. It's just not my bag, but you know, hey, it's really cool for someone out there, and it is neat that it is, you know, AMG does mean like brute force power, and the numbers they're getting is just astronomical. I mean, my hat's off to engineers, I guess, is the best thing I can say.
And Brad, you don't have to worry. It's not like Smith and I can afford this thing either.
I am a little sad to, like, because I mean, I just cleared room in the shop. I'm going to put this out in the garage. No, I want to share a comment here. Pilf JD, am I saying your name right there? Are you a first time commenter? Is this the first time we've seen?
I think we have a few first-time commenters. I haven't.
Yeah, we've got a lot of first-timers here in the chat. We love seeing everybody. The comment: why even electrify against the regular SL to charge more? And there's no quotes on charge, but I think I'm getting the meaning there. I mean, that's a valid question. As I was looking at this, and when you look at the stats, I mean, the top speed one. Who's going that fast, even on a track? There are very few tracks I can think of where you'll be able to stretch it all the way out to 197 miles an hour. You're not doing that on the street, right?
It is German, though. So I do give German cars a pass because they have the Autobahn. And yes, even on the Autobahn, I had never been there, but I understand it. It's difficult to get 200 miles per hour on Autobahn.
Right.
But the idea is that it's kind of like when you're towing, right? Like you don't want to be towing at your... If your truck can tow 10,000 pounds, right, and you're continually, it's going to tow 8,000 pounds easier. So, like, if you want to go 170 miles an hour, this will be able to go 170 miles per hour all day, no problem. Whereas if you had a car that top speed was 170, it'd be very hard to get there. But
you're absolutely right there. I mean, when you look at the numbers, just the top speed, the 0 to 60, they aren't drastically different. But you will really, really feel that from, like, you know, 100 to 150. It's just going to be a completely different sensation in that versus the regular SL63. But yeah, having driven higher horsepower cars and owning higher horsepower cars, I still stand by the mantra that 5 to maybe 550 is sort of that sweet spot. That's the point where. Okay, if you have a manual transmission, especially first gear, forget about it. You're not using it unless you're just going slow and you don't feel like running the clutch a little bit more in second. But beyond that, on the street, I mean, you should obey all traffic laws, but it's still more or less a manageable amount of power. If you start to tip into the throttle after that, the traction control isn't going to immediately kick in and knock 200 horse off. You get beyond that, and that's really what you're running into on the street. You're just never using that amount of power. You go to the track, you go to the drag strip. Yeah, you can use it. But how often are people doing that? And if you are doing it very often, you're probably just building a car to go do it specifically for. So yeah, that's my two cents on the horsepower war. But I mean, with electric power, I mean, that horsepower, the horsepower war isn't going to go anywhere because it's so easy to make big power with electric motors.
One nice little thing about electric motors with cars like this that I do appreciate, especially performance cars or this, like the Corvette E-Ray, is that if you live in a very affluent neighborhood and you don't want to piss off your neighbors and you have a loud car, you can start it in, I'm assuming this car will have something like the Corvette E-Ray does or other cars like this, where you can start it in electric mode. And then, you know, and then at some point the actual engine will fire up. So when you're outside of the neighborhood. So that's kind of a nice little thing too, that might matter to some people more than others. Mm-hmm.
Sure. And yeah. but I would expect, this being Mercedes, it's going to be ridiculously quiet even in like full on engine on mode, right?
Okay.
The SL probably is not really really known as a really aggressive. It's, you know, it's that.
But like the Vets and
yeah
absolutely turn it into quiet mode.
So. Guys, we didn't discuss this before the show. Do we want to talk Radwood next, or do we want to talk car toys next?
Oh, we're going to talk Radwood, man. We're going to talk Radwood for the next 20 years.
Okay. Okie doke.
Just because, Brad, I always love it when you're on the show, and I've been yearning to get to a proper Radwood event for years, and I had a taste of that a couple years ago in South Dakota when there was just like a little mini event set up that was just 80s, 90s culture, and I absolutely loved it. I went in not a costume, but I had like my 80s jean jacket. I had my Reeboks. I didn't show up in full-on Wham attire like we're seeing here. Straight from, I mean, what is that?
It's the waiting for you go-go.
Is that 85?
Somewhere around there. I can't remember. 84, 85.
Well, tell us a little bit about this, because this was an event that you were at recently. You had a great time there.
Yeah.
Obviously, it's not just about a car show. It's just about the whole era. So tell us about this event. Where was this at, and what all took place?
So basically in late November, early December, there's lots of Radwoods every year. I would say that's where we're trying to be. They're around the country. But the one that my wife and I always go to is the one that's in SoCal, which is in LA area. Mm-hmm. And that's usually like near the end of the year. And every year we try to think of something just different that we can dress up as. Jason Camisa was the guy running the costume contest part. We were like second, basically. We lost to someone who was like dressed as soccer moms from the '80s or something like that. And, it's a lot of fun. People get into it. Like, a lot of people like dressing up. You know, they play '80s and '90s music, and it's only '80s, '90s cars. And, I love it because I get to see some really random cars, like my favorite cars there. You know, there's cars that you just never see anywhere else that are just, you know, if you love 80s and 90s cars, this is like the place to go, because that's where they're brought out and given a place to shine. These are just my personal favorites. This photo album right here that you're seeing, some really cool. I think that 969 was the winner of the whole show.
Yeah, because I mean, was Porsche there? Has a manufacturer? Because I mean, we're seeing some properly. I mean, I think that one 911 was. Didn't we cover that, Bruce, a while ago as an art car, and the 969 too? I think.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Porsche was there. I mean, nowadays it's grown to a point where there are some, you know, sponsors that will be there. I think Mobile One sponsors the event now, and Haggerty helps run it. Actually, I think these are just random photos of just some cool stuff that was there, but it's a great time. And there's rad accessories. And it's just if you love 80s, 90s stuff, it's great. And the other thing that I noticed this year that was surprising was that, you know, if you're born in the 80s, like I am, you know, this is all nostalgic, but what's really cool to see is how many people who were born after the Radwood era that are enjoying the show now. For whatever reason, it's just they like the style or the music or whatever. So it's not just nostalgia. It's just an appreciation of that time frame.
I want to point out here real quick, and this image is the perfect way to illustrate it, is so you have these two cars in front here that are both, you know, well into the six-figure cars. You have some very cool BMWs in the back. And then if you look there, right in the back, you've got a Fiero. So yep. Everyone is welcome. You know, actually, I guess the one is an Alfa Romeo Milano, not a BMW. But anyway, but, you know, you've got a $100,000 Porsche worth today, and then a very nice Fiero just hanging out in the background. It gets the love, too.
Yep.
How many cars would you say were at this event this year?
Oh, there's usually like 150, 200, okay. Something like that. People bring out their old, you know, and you just never know what you're going to see. And that's part of why I like it beyond just, you know, seeing friends and the community. It's a great show. Radwood.com. You can sort of see a schedule of, you know, the different shows they have. I feel like they are expanding and trying to go into different markets that they might not have been before. It's great. People dress up and have a good time and it's cool. Very, very rad show.
Hey, somebody a little bit older, I was born in the mid 70s. Mm-hmm. So I remember the 80s very, very clearly. And like you were saying, there are a lot of younger people that are just kind of getting into the air. I'm a little embarrassed sometimes when I see them dress up in what they think we wore. And it's just like, okay, you know what? Yes, there were a lot of people with big hair, but your hair is like way, way, way big. And I mean, I guess it's maybe a caricature of the event of the era, but, I think it's neat to see. And I distinctly remember like 91, 92 when grunge is really coming in and everybody was just like, oh, the 80s were terrible. We want nothing to do with them. And then a little more time has gone by and it's like, okay, maybe they weren't that terrible. I mean, it was, I'm going to try not to get too preachy here.
Okay.
But it was, in my opinion, arguably the biggest defining era for the automobile, and people love to trash on the cars of the 80s. This is when computer control and electronics came in, and that changed everything. Absolutely everything up until probably, I'm trying to remember some of the earlier. I mean, I think Mercedes was starting to dip into that in the mid 70s or so, but up to that point, the formula for automobiles remained relatively the same as it had from the very beginning. And then here comes technology. Here comes more advanced control systems, computer control. And that just changed the whole process. And it led to an 816 horsepower Mercedes that is quiet, that is comfortable. I'm assuming it's comfortable. I haven't driven one yet, Mercedes. So send one my way so I can confirm this. Or even like the Hellcats that can be driven, daily driven with 700-800 horse. That all happened because of what happened in the 1980s. And I'm super excited to see it getting some love and respect.
Well, I think that people are, you know, I really got into cars, like new cars in like the early 90s. And that was such an exciting time to be a car fan because, you know, from just knowing history, you know, cars were so cool. And then the gas crisis hit and then just overnight, the power the cars had was like halved. And all automakers could do was just keep up and the double whammy, especially in America, of all the different safety concerns that were hitting. So the industry went from basically they could do whatever they want to being super regulated and they had to worry about gas mileage, compression ratios went, you know, down and all these safety things. And all they could do was just keep up with it. Around the time of the early 80s is when they started to kind of come out of that, where every year the cars got better and better and more powerful. And then by the 90s, they had really gotten stuff figured out. And even like economy cars were getting like reasonable power. and could be really fun. And so to me, my favorite era of cars is always going to be like the 90s specifically. But overall, Radwood is just, to me, just a walk down some of the best, some of my personal favorite cars that were like ever made.
Oh, yeah. It's I love both decades. Has evidenced I have two 95 Fords sitting in my shop. One runs, one does not. So one of these days I'll be able to get both of those to Radwood. Brad, let me ask you a question. We were kind of talking about this a little bit earlier. We're talking 1980 to 1999, pretty much full stop. But is there any grace period for, say, well, a PT Cruiser that had its beginnings in the late 90s, but if you have like an 02, I mean, is there wiggle room there, or is it
there is wiggle room. It's called the continuation clause. You can read all about it on the Radwood like official Facebook group. But it's a gray area basically, and it's almost case by case. And different people will sort of judge it differently. But the way that I personally look at it is that if you had a car that was, I'm trying to think, like the Honda S2000, right? Did that come out in like the year 2000 and onward? That's not a rad car. But let's say you had something like, let's say, like a Ford Crown Victoria.
Oh, yeah. There you go.
Like a Ford Crown Victoria, right? Which didn't change much from, let's say, 1999 to the year 2000, 2001. Mm-hmm. Or whenever, you know, once they get to a point where there's like a noticeable facelift. Like, I don't know, maybe like 2002, they did a noticeable facelift, or I can't remember when it was. But, you know, when there's a point where they start looking noticeably different, then that's a problem. To use like the PT Cruiser, which I want to say came out, let's say like 98, 97, right? There was a point, there was a facelift in the early 2000s, and I would say that is now too old.
After that, okay.
Yeah, so it's a gray area. And same thing goes the other way. If you have a car that was made in 1979, but it's the exact same looking as a 1980 model, it's fine, you know, and you know, no one's going to chase you away necessarily, you know, but if you want to really be in the spirit of it, there's what's called peak rad, which is something would be like a C4 Corvette or Fiero, where it's like, it is like definitive of the era. Like those are the ones that are like the most fun to bring, that the crowd will probably most appreciate. The Cadillac Cimarron, you know, that was one of my favorite cars I saw there. You know, something where it's like it only existed in the rad area. Those are like the ones that really are like the most fun to see.
So now you were there with your C4 Corvette?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And well, tell us again. I know you've been on the show before, but tell us again about your Corvette.
Oh, yeah. It's a 1996 C4 Corvette, which is the last year of the C4. It's a great car. 6-speed, 1-year only LT4 engine, which is like a hot rod LT1. It's my daily driver. It's got like 40, I just turned 40,000 miles, and it's been a really great car for me. Nice. I really enjoy driving it. It's great for daily. It's great for canyon carving, which I do a lot. And there's a bunch of videos on it on my YouTube channel, which is called Retro Cars Forever, if you want to find out more about it. Yeah.
Now,
I'm actually going to promote that for you. You did a fantastic comparison between your C4 and you had a buddy who had a ZR1, and you did, you know, you found an abandoned road, to be fair, and you did kind of some instrumented testing. It was an abandoned road. Like you said, it was, I believe you said it dead ended at one end. So no one was coming down this road.
Yeah. No, we found this. Yeah. Yeah. Thank you. I appreciate that. And I appreciate you guys sharing that. That was a really fun video to make.
Oh, yeah, it's fantastic to watch, too.
And we have links. If you're at Motor One YouTube watching right now, we actually have links in the description below that take you over to Brad's Instagram and YouTube page to check out all of the goodness there. Bruce, I've been kind of monopolizing the conversation here for a little bit. But I want to ask a question, Brad.
Oh, so you're not going to let me ask a question?
Yeah, I'm just going to continue monopolizing for a little bit. I don't know why you were thinking otherwise there.
Just keep going. Okay.
I mean, there are several Radwood events around the country. Is there one central event that's thought of as the biggest, or the, if you can only attend one, this is the one to go to?
Not really. I do know that Radwood started 7 or 8 years ago in California. And California, but in California is just naturally where you're going to find probably the most of these kinds of cars, just because we don't have rust. You know, people are relatively affluent here. So they, you know, you're going to find a lot of survivors here, which you might not find in other states. But From what I've seen, there's many big events, like great turnout all over the place. So I don't think there's any that are like small events, unless it's like, sometimes they will do special things where like they'll have like their own little corner at like a track or like a concourse event or something like that. But in general, if it's a full on Radwood show, there's going to be lots of cars there and lots of cool people.
And Bruce, for the love of God, please stop putting up the picture of the gold Chrysler Laser. Man, I love that thing. Yeah. I want that car so bad. I like the open, the earlier ones, the Lasers or the Daytonas that still had the open headlights before they went to pop. I know pop-ups are cool, but those Daytonas and the Lasers, just with the open headlights. Oh, that's,
I love that there's a Starion behind it. That's rad
goodness right there.
I'm talking
about that. That particular Laser won best domestic at the show.
Nice.
In the awards. Yeah. And well deserved. It had like 30,000 miles. It had like stupid low miles. It was like the cleanest Laser I've ever seen. I mean, you know, didn't even look that great when they were new, I swear.
Right.
It was fantastic. So yeah, you can see he's holding his award. He's, you know, and yeah, there's fun awards. Honestly, don't do it for the awards, but you know, people do get recognition. And I do think that people who give out the awards, you know, they're pretty fair with the kinds of cool, they're very deserving, I will say. Yeah.
Well, and the Laser, I mean, you see Daytonas, you see Dodge Daytonas. You don't see many of the Chrysler Lasers.
Right.
And I mean, that just makes it even better. Was that an automatic or a 5-speed?
I think it was a 5-speed is my memory. It has a little turbo, say.
2-2 turbo.
Yeah, that amazing.
Why are we ignoring the Starion in the background?
Because the Laser is in front. The Starion is good too. Oh, it's all good.
It's got louvers, dude. It's I that's the car I'm looking at. Sorry.
Yeah, that's good stuff too.
You could put louvers. I've seen Lasers and Daytonas with louvers.
I have too.
And yeah, and the it is weird because I remember growing up and thinking they were like really cool, but I didn't know why they were there. Now I realize they were there to keep out the sun from like hatchbacks, so that you wouldn't cook. So instead of tint, you'd put those louver things there, and when you looked back, it would still be relatively bright. And I think they're a great
you
know, rad era specific accessory. They're like gone now; you never see. Someone should bring that back. You know, if the Mercedes brought something like that back, you know, bring a hatchback with the louvers, that'd be great.
If I didn't have a convertible, I would have louvers on my Mustang. I would absolutely. I'm not lying. In fact, I'm pretty sure I can go to one of several Mustang parts companies and buy louvers for my car. I know I can absolutely get like louvers for the little side windows. And I'm pretty certain I can get louvers for the rear. And yeah, I mean, they were a big thing through the 70s and into the 80s, and they kind of went away. I don't really know why they went away. That would be an interesting thing to try to look up to see if there was some sort of legislation, maybe. Worries of blocking rearward vision, which they didn't.
No, it's the other way around. Hatchbacks went away. And so there wasn't a use for them anymore. Once hatchbacks went away, which was a after effect of the car company's obsession with structural rigidity, basically, is my understanding. Like, you know, a lot of cars went away from hatchbacks into fixed, you know, more fixed trunk designs because of it was, you know, it makes the structure stiffer and people cared more about that than the extra luggage space. And then your glass window isn't as huge. Now you don't need that. That to me is the beyond it just kind of falling out of fashion in general.
Yeah, but now we don't have hatchbacks. We have liftbacks that cost five times as much because it's not a hatchback.
Right.
It's a liftback. Yeah. So how many Radwood events have you been to?
Jeez. I've gone to, my wife and I have gone to every single one that's been in LA. I want to say it's like 6, 7, something like that. Every single one that has been Radwood SoCal in LA, we have been to from the start. So a lot, and look forward to it every year. It's still my favorite car show.
I want to ask you a question about that because I reached out to you shortly after seeing you post all of the stuff on Instagram that we're looking at now to have you on the show, and now we're finally doing it. But my original thought was I thought your wife would join us and tell us about her experience of going to these events as well. You guys would be together, and you messaged me back saying she doesn't really like cars.
That's so, not true. I guess that's
my
not
question
true at all.
Is, how do you convince her to dress up with you to go
no,
to
no,
these
no, no,
events?
No, that is not true. She does like cars, but I don't know if she could ramble on about cars for
I misunderstood.
A long time. You know what I mean? But she, you know, she enjoys looking at the cars and taking photos, and we enjoy dressing up and you know, doing something fun, you know. And so it's, you know, and that's the thing too. A lot of couples, like, you know, here's another couple, you know, they enjoy dressing up and getting into the swing of things. And yeah, it's fun. A lot of people go and bring their partners and they have a good time.
All right. That was
it looks like you're just having a blast. If it doesn't come through, I'm just super jealous. Super jealous. I need to get to a Radwood event. I believe there's one in Detroit. I can't remember when it takes place. But yeah, I've got to get down there. Brian Gurney in the comments. I grew up in a 1985 Saab 900 turbo. One of my favorite parts was the giant window louvers we had on it. Yeah. I mean, a Saab 900 with the louvers.
You've never seen that?
I've seen it. I'm not sure it gets much better. Maybe like a 280 or a 300 ZX with louvers.
Yeah.
And Group FBC, a partner who agrees to dress up as Wham, is an absolute keeper.
There you go.
Now, to be fair, it was actually her idea.
That's even better.
She's always been a huge Wham fan. We lose Whamageddon every year immediately because we just like listening to him. But there was a great Netflix documentary that came out about Wham. And I didn't really know much about Wham. And I saw that and had a whole new respect for them. And once we saw that, I'm like, yeah, let's go ahead and do this outfit. It was her idea to do the outfit. She's a huge 80s music fan. I think it also makes it, you know, fun if you like that music from the era and really celebrate it. It's like a huge nostalgia trip. It's great.
So before we move on to car toys, and actually this fits because we're looking at your Instagram and we're going to be talking something toy-ish. You recently were at Universal Studios, I assume the one in California, you got to ride the Mario Kart ride, and that's definitely car related. So just give us a quick take on the Mario Kart ride.
It is not, you're in these little cars. I can see sort of behind us in that photo. You're wearing these like virtual reality goggles, and you are kind of like an old Disney ride. You're on this, you're on a track inside of the car. And you're steering, but you're not really, it's not like you're telling the car where to go. You're sort of like steering when it prompts you to, like an old driver's ed test. And you're trying to get points, essentially. So you're trying to get points by steering at the right time. You have little buttons on your steering wheel, and that shoots shells at enemies. And you're trying to hit the enemies that you see that pop up in front of you in virtual reality. And the more enemies you hit and the more steering inputs you do correctly, the higher the score. And it was really fun. We went a couple times. It's not now what I would love to see, and maybe they're working on this in Japan, is an actual, like, you're in an actual go-kart. That's what I would love to see at some point. Like, you're in a real go-kart with virtual reality things, and you drive over the question marks and you get things and you can. And I would love to see, like, you know, and then, like, let's say you get a red shell and you shoot it correctly at somebody in virtual reality, then their motor dies for a bit. You know, like, I want to see a real race, like, you know, but this is still, like, really fun. It just isn't like a real Mario Kart, you know, experience as you might imagine.
Cool. Okay. I just wanted a quick take on that because that's a fairly recent ride. It's been less than a year, certainly.
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Well, I tell you what, since we're talking Mario Kart here and we're about to talk about some retro toys, Brad, you're a child of the 80s, and Bruce, you're sort of a child of the 80s, and I'm a child of the 80s.
I was born in 1985. I am
Okay, well, what's your earliest 80s memory?
Oh,
I don't know.
Because I remember disco.
Oh, well, disco would have been gone by the time we were around in the mid, you know, they would have been not as dying days.
Anyways, let me steer it back here.
Go for it.
Video games.
Yes.
80s video games. What are your picks, Brad?
Oh, just my favorite?
80s car games, I guess.
Oh, 80s car games. Well, yeah. I have good memories of playing, I think it was at Pole Position at our local Pizza Hut. It was like you had the steering wheel and you were in this like the windy car, and it was very like, you know, chunky graphics and chunky sound effects. But I remember that.
That started it all, man. The cabinet console, and that was a depiction of Fuji Speedway. You were racing.
Oh, was it?
Actual. Okay, I mean, it's as best as they could get an 8-bit, but.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, no, it was. I mean, car video game Outrun is the first one I think of. Like, I was definitely definitely played Outrun in the 80s. This was a little bit later. I think this is 91, but Ivan Iron Man Stewart Super Off-Road.
Yes. God,
that's a good game.
That was the one where it was, it wasn't like point of view. It was sort of like the camera didn't move, right? And you kind of had a little truck and it would jump around, right? In the circle,
but the
or
steering
something.
Wheel had no stop on it.
So you can just whip
that's right.
Yep.
Yeah.
Spin it one way like you're opening up a door on a submarine, man. And then flip it back the other way.
Yeah.
Good times.
Good times. The nitros.
It's just slinging the wheel and just tapping the nitro button.
Yeah. That's a good
Absolutely. Do we want to talk about some retro toys?
I'd love to.
Since we're going back in time here a little bit. And it's a little personal to my heart too, because I finally got my hopefully series launched yesterday with toys that we forgot, the coolest car toys that we forgot. And it starts with the Matchbox Super Spin Car Wash, which is in my collection. That's what kind of prompted the whole thing. Bruce, you're gonna pull it up for me? I was ready to ask you to vamp so I could pull up the pictures, but nope, you got it. This was in storage at my parents' house, which is now my house, since I was a kid. And as I'm going through boxes trying to get stuff cleared out, here it is. And it was like, well, what should I do with this thing? I mean, it's just a toy, right? And then I pulled it out. It's like, well, I kind of remember this, and this is pretty cool. And then I looked inside, and I was like, oh, I remember the belt broke, and I can't remember how it broke, but I tried to fix it with scotch tape when I was like 10. And the scotch tape is still on the belt. So it's like, okay, so I'm kind of nosing around, and then I decide, oh, I wonder if I could write something about this. So I'm like taking photos, and I'm taking it apart to see if I can fix it and what all I can do. And that led to the coolest car toys that we forgot. It starts with the Super Spin Car Wash. If you are interested, as best I could find, these started in 1981. Mine has a date stamp of 1981 on it. They changed colors through the years, but it went up through, I think, the late 80s, early 90s. And then they created another Super Spin Car Wash in the 2000s that was completely different. But mine is OG. And it is still non-functional because I tried to fix that belt. Actually, if you look here in the photo towards the top, you can see the belt just kind of hanging there. It just disintegrated when I tried to take it apart. I mean, it's 40-year-old rubber belt that was never intended to last that long. So maybe I'll go try to find some replacement. Maybe I'll try to fix it. I don't know. But in the meantime, I clean it up as best I could. The spin portion still works. I can still put a little Lamborghini Countach in there. It's all manual. I pull the handle, the thing spins around, and it's just sitting over here on my display case on top with all of the other toys that I will hopefully write about in the near future. But since we're talking Radwood, I wasn't intending to do this, but Radwood is hitting such a nostalgia point with so many people. And we were talking about before the show, Brad, that there's not really a lot of people revisiting some of these older toys. And I've even been nosing around on eBay some to see. I'm not selling this. In the article, the series that I'm going to have going forward, the plan is to, okay, here's my personal experience with this. Here's a little bit about it. Here's the condition of mine right now. Then what am I going to do with it from here? I'm not selling this one. But I'm not sure if the nostalgia is hitting strong enough yet for people to start paying big, crazy money for stuff, except like Transformers or some of the really like the big A-list stuff from the 80s, you know?
Well, I think they are. I think, go ahead.
Oh, no, go ahead, Brad. I'll chime in a second. Go for it.
Well, one thing this brought up in me, first of all, it's a great idea for a series, and I hope you get to do more. But one thing that this has brought up to me, we can go really deep here, but something that I have been curious about is a bigger question, is nostalgia healthy? Is it weird as middle-aged men to be, you know, even interested in things from our youth, in cars from our childhood, in toys or video games from our childhood, right? And interestingly enough, I was reading a psychology book, and again, this is going a little deeper maybe than you want to go on the car show, but actually, nostalgia can be healthy because the idea is, I can't remember which book I was reading, but the idea is that when you are younger, you are free of any cares about what anyone thinks about you, right? You're a kid, you play with whatever, you don't care, right? But as time goes on, your personality morphs to better suit your parents' expectation of you, society's expectation of you, and you end up with what I can't remember what the psychologist calls, but what's essentially like a mask of not your real self. You kind of create this persona that isn't your real self, right? And that if you want to be true to your real self, you have to rediscover your true self. Nostalgia can, in a weird way, help you do that because you're going back to reconnecting with yourself before you cared about any of that, right? Before you cared about what society cared about you or thought about you or whoever, right? Before you cared about judgment. So in some ways, this can be a healthy, as long as you're not, you know, taking out your second mortgage to buy right. old Matchbox toys or something.
I'm filling every room.
In moderation, it can actually be a healthy way to reconnect with your true self, which I thought was interesting.
It is an interesting take. And I mean, nostalgia, when it comes to physical items like this, okay, don't hate me. It's a dumb plastic toy. Has somebody in his 40s, I'm not playing with this. I'm not over there running cars around, you know, doing.
Why not? I would.
Maybe once when I first pulled it back up. But
yeah,
it's not about the physical item. It's about the memory. People are going out and they're paying, you know, good money to get these older things, not because they want those older things. They want that memory. And, yeah. and you can sit there and have the memory just by seeing a picture and, oh, I remember when I had that. But then having that tangible physical sensation mm-hmm. clicks into something else. And like I said in the article, as I'm taking this apart to see, okay, can I, because the spin mechanism was a little sticky and I wanted to see if the water pump would still work. I took it apart and I opened it up. And I mean, last time I used this, I was a kid in rural Michigan in a sandbox. I mean, I had a big sandbox. Yeah, that's how old Chris is. He was playing in a freaking sandbox. But I mean, big sandbox. And I would have like little canyons and stuff to run the cars around with. And then I would go inside and play with the Nintendo a little bit. Yeah, I got outside. It's healthy. There was sand in the bottom of this Super Spin car wash, and yeah. I didn't buy this from eBay. This was mine as a kid. So that sand in the sandbox was my sand.
Yeah.
I had this kind of flip out moment. It's like, ooh, I should sweep that up and put it into a little baggie. And it's like, dude, what is wrong with you, man?
Well, there's an extra nostalgia hit, I think, that's extra powerful if you have a toy or any treasured possession from your childhood, if it is specifically yours. Like, it's cool if it's like, oh, I had this cool toy and I don't have it anymore, so I'm going to go on eBay and find one that's similar to it. Mm-hmm. But it's extra special when it is actually yours and you still have it. And in fact, now I look back and I'm so upset on some of the toys that I had that I just like threw away in college.
For oh, I know. Space.
And I'm just I did like, the same oh, thing, man. But there's still a couple things I have, and I'm very happy that I still have them. This particular, my very first model car that I made when I was maybe 8 or something like that. You know, like I'm so happy I have the actual first model car that I made with my grandpa who got me into cars, you know, like, yes, I could go on eBay and find one that's similar, but the fact that this was the one that we built together. And now I think of my grandpa who's no longer with us every time I have this is extra special. And, you know, when you have old stuff like that, it can unlock memories that you don't remember. Like I'm sure, Smith, when you were going through and like, oh yeah, I remember having that sandbox and all the cool stuff I did with it, you know, I
think sandbox connection never came up until I took it apart. It's like, it's all dirty. Oh, wait a minute.
Yeah.
That's sand from my sandbox that I washed off of my Countach. And yes, Group FBC, good God, man, taking a Countach through an automated car wash, you heathen. If you go back to some of the photos, if you look, it's now a touchless car wash because the little foam rollers are gone. I found one lane in the bottom, so I have no idea where the others went. Bruce, could you do me a favor and kind of flip through those photos?
So you did not upload them as a gallery, as far as I can tell. Individually.
They should be a gallery. If you can try to get the lead image up there because.
Oh, I can do that. Yeah.
There's an Easter egg in here of what I hope will be a future coolest toys we forgot. And if you bring up that image, I'll do another little teaser here for everybody. While that's happening, Brad, I mean, talk about some of your classic toys that you remember fondly here.
I remember my friends had this, and I remember that one unfortunate side effect was that if you had any cars with like stickers on the side, they tended not to last long through this, you know, because you're literally like pouring stuff on and stuff like that. I loved Micro Machines. That was my big obsession.
Thank you.
Yeah. And I think I might have sent one of you guys some photos, but loved having Micro Machines. I don't know why. Maybe it was just the idea that you could. I was actually kind of upset when they brought back Micro Machines and they're no longer based on real cars. The thing that made them really special was it was like, they were modeled very well on a very small scale after real vehicles. So it's like, you know, when you're a kid, you can't have a Corvette, right? But you can, and you can have several of them. And they were so small, you could fit a wad of them like in your pocket, you know? And then unfortunately you would, you know, go in the car and they would slide down into the back seat of the, you know, your dad's Buick and that crack and you never see them again. But you know, but it didn't matter because they were cheap. You could buy them and they looked cool. And they came with cool carrying cases.
Like cool play sets and things where, carrying cases for the Hot Wheels, but the carrying case was like its whole little thing. You could open it up and play and do all kinds of things.
Yeah.
Very cool. Bruce, come on, man. Something from your childhood.
Yeah. I've been ready here. I'm all in. First off, I'm showing off some Micro Machines because I was actually going to be talking about Micro Machines here in literally just a second. But you can see the cool thing about Micro Machines is also they came as a set. So you didn't just get one car. You would get, you know, each one of these would be in a little pack. So you get like five cars in a pack and, you know, they're mini. And generally there was like some sort of theme to them. Like you can see here's like, you know, like really colorful stuff or here's old hot rods or, you know, just whatever. The one I was going to bring up is also a Micro Machines thing, and that was the race in a case. And I will present an image of that.
I think I remember that. I never had any Micro Machines, but there are a lot of kids that I knew that did. Yes. Oh my God. I remember that.
I had this. Holy cow.
I still have this. I still own this.
You still have it?
You still have it?
Yes. That's the thing. You guys were talking about getting rid of your toys. I didn't get rid of my toys. I have them all.
Sweet.
That's awesome. Oh, wow.
But yes, so this was a slot car track. But as you can see up here on the upper right, it folded into like a little briefcase. So like theoretically, you could take a slot car track anywhere. And it wasn't huge because they were Micro Machines. It was micro, but it was still a transportable slot car track.
That was cool. Yeah. I mean, the cool thing about Micro Machines and their carrying case is that, you know, you were like the coolest kid showing up in the preschool playground with your, I think there was one that was like a van and it pulled out to like San Francisco. And the one I had was like a helicopter or something. And, you know, and the fact that they're so portable, I think that's what made Micro Machines so extra fun.
Right.
They were coming in just as I hate to say the term aging out, Because I was still a little jealous, you know, when some of the kids at school would bring him in and set him up. I was super, super into Transformers by that era, like 86, 87.
Yeah.
I was just totally into them.
Brad,
here's yeah. Van. There's my van. There's the van.
Super Van yeah. City.
Super Van City. Oh, they all, by the way, had fun little ads. All ads for, at least for boys at the time, had fun little jingles to go with yes. This one. Super Van City, Micro Machines. Like, they would have these,
oh my God, I remember these
fun
that.
Little, they would have these fun little things, and you were so jazzed when these ads came out. And the Micro Machines guy started really fast. And Micro Machines, small. You know, the marketing itself was really fun. And I mean, look at all this stuff you could do. You had a little race in the bottom. It looked like a Ford Aerostar when you put it together. I mean, it was this was living, man. This was great. Four screens. This is what we had, and kind of thankful about that. Actually, it wasn't too bad.
Bruce, you still have these things?
I have my race in the yeah. So that's the thing, is that I never got rid of any of this stuff. I had my I have in my attic. I've got plastic containers, and it has all of my toys in them.
Wow.
It's time to bust that stuff out, man.
Yeah, dude.
What are you doing next week before Christmas? I'm heading down.
Yeah, you're welcome to come. Yeah, I know where everything is. There it's protected. Wow. It's yeah.
Well, guess who's contributing to the coolest car toys we forgot series?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Chris Bruce. Let me do a quick shout out here. Pilf JD, memorable childhood toy. Tamiya Grasshopper. Brad, you and I were kind of messaging last night about RC cars. I totally remember the Grasshopper. I used to read RC Toys, or no, RC Car Action was the magazine.
That's a great name for a magazine.
RC Car, I think it was RC Car Action, but it was like, it was in the school library, right? Back when there was actually print stuff there. And it's like you just always go to the back, instantly go to the back to look at all the cool stuff that was for sale. Grasshopper was like, it was always there. It was always the one to get. I was talking with Brad last night. I'm keeping an eye out on eBay for the Nico Mosquito, which is, I think it was like a 1/16 scale. It wasn't the large buggy. It was the smaller buggy that you could get at like just like the regular store. Yeah. And it was small enough where it didn't have the bigger battery pack. It just had the double A's. I adored that when I was a kid, and I have no idea what happened to it. And I've kept an eye out if I could find a decent one. I did find one that was up on eBay like a year or so ago that was like never opened, still in the box and everything. And they wanted $500. And I was just like, I can't do $500. For all I know, it's still up there, but yeah. Brad, did you ever figure out what you were trying to, cause you were like, you had one that was like the size bigger.
It was a couple sizes bigger, and I want to say it was made in the 90s, but thinking about all this stuff did make me think, you know, further on, you know, I feel like every car enthusiast I know of grew up with a bunch of like car toys. And thankfully the market was more than happy to satiate our need.
Oh my gosh.
And beyond that, even if you might age out of, let's say, Hot Wheels or Micro Machines, for me, then I went on to, you know, the next step was car models or like Technic Legos of cars or like things like that, right?
Or RC cars,
right. And to me, what it kind of made me think about was that, you know, The curse of being a young car enthusiast is that you can't actually drive a car. You're too young to own a car. And that in some ways, toys or models or RC cars or even slot cars or whatever it is, was in a weird way a way to like bide the time until you were old enough to drive and own your own car, right? Because while you couldn't own a real Corvette, you could own a model Corvette or a Micro Machine Corvette or a Hot Wheels Corvette. You know what I mean? And right. I think it was like, you know, I just remember, but you know, counting down the days until I was 16, you know what I mean? And I could own my own car and drive my own car. And in a weird way, like car toys or car models or whatever was like a fun way to like fill that gap and be like the next best thing, you know? Well, I can't drive a real car, but I can drive an RC car.
I can drive an RC car and it's mine. This is my car.
And it's yours.
I can't climb into it. Yeah, exactly. Yeah. I gotta share this comment really quick. Group FBC, the big debate was Hot Wheels versus Matchbox. Yeah. In 1997, it ceased to exist because Mattel bought Matchbox, which, of course, Mattel had Hot Wheels at the point. But I get what you're saying. I kind of like Matchbox.
Back in the 80s, 90s, I liked Matchbox because they were real cars.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, Hot Wheels had real cars too, but they also had some of the more wild stuff.
True. Yes.
Well,
Matchbox was always a real car.
Yeah, I just watched a documentary about that, and first of all, Matchbox was first, and they're a UK company, and they're based on reality with cars. Hot Wheels came around in like the 60s, yes. California company, and their big thing was, first of all, making the cars a little bit more outrageous and not necessarily be accurate, but they also rolled much better. They rolled way smoother, and they had tracks and all that other stuff, and I loved having the Hot Wheels tracks that you would have going. You know, we'd have a couple story house, and you could have them start at like the top of the stairs in your bedroom and go all the way down to the basement, you know. So I was a Hot Wheels guy for that reason alone, is that they had all the tracks and the fun stuff. And the cars were a little bit more outlandish. Although I think by the time the 80s or 90s came around, they did have some realistic Hot Wheels.
Oh, yeah, they did.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So, guys, we are at just over an hour. So, Brad, we were going to talk about your used car search. I think just for reasons of time, we got to skip that tonight.
But sounds good. Let's do it.
Whenever you buy it, maybe you should come back on and show it off.
Sure. Love to. Sounds good.
Absolutely. Because we touched on it a little bit. You might have a Camaro in mind, but you're looking for like a Goldilocks, like a unicorn Camaro from the 90s. You've got to come back on when you find it. And I have faith in you. You will find it.
Thanks, guys. We'll see. Keeping it open, though. I mean, I'm always interested in different cars. So, yeah.
But now, without a further ado, let's get into the cheap car challenge. And again, I'll repeat for if anyone missed it at the beginning, you've got $10,000 to spend. It must be right-hand drive. Unless you're one of our foreign listeners in Australia, South Africa, England, then it must be left-hand drive. And $10,000 is the total price. There's no finding a $9,000 car in Japan and bringing it over. No, you get $10,000. So, who would like to go first?
I think Mr. Hansen has to go first, being the guest here on the show.
Okay.
Sure.
And now, guys, before we jump into it, was this harder or easier than you thought?
Both.
Because I thought it was easier.
I had an easier time than I thought, just because especially in California, I feel like I tried to find one that was also close to me. There's a lot of interest in right-hand drive cars. So this is my pick here. It is almost exactly $10,000. It is a UK edition of the RAV4. So it is right-hand drive. The UK did all these weird, like, special editions for RAV4s. Like, every year they had some special thing. For 98, there was the Free Sport edition. And they were just mostly, like, you know, colors and graphics or wheels or something like that. But, yeah, this one looks really, really nice. It's a stick.
It does.
It's four-wheel drive, center locking differential, and the colors are great. But to me, the part that's really great is the super 90s fabric material of the seats. If you can get one of the photos where you can see the seats. There.
Oh, yeah.
There we go. Yeah, it's got the beautiful,
there we go.
Beautiful 90s fabric style that that's what made me choose this one specifically.
That is so 90s. I can't think of how many cars I saw with a similar print like that in the 90s. Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah. And so kudos for finding a right-hand drive car that's not a Japanese import.
Yeah.
I was trying so hard to find something in that vein and not have it be like a U.S. mail vehicle, which I know some of our commenters were talking. Yes, there are actually quite a few Jeeps and Subarus in America that are set up as right-hand drive for the U.S. post office so they can go along and drop mail into the mailbox without having to climb across the car.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Imported in March 2023, so it's only been in the country for a few months. The car that Brad picked, 109,000 miles, almost 110,000 miles. Yeah, that's a cool one.
Yeah, and it looks like it's been taken care of too. And now, granted, registering and smogging a right hand an import car in California is kind of a nightmare. So a lot of people here, they'll just title them somewhere else.
You need to come live with Smith and I. There's no smog in Michigan and Ohio. Nope.
That's true. Yeah. So that is the one trick. Like, you know, I think I have a friend that did import one and did do it all. And it was a good like $8,000 proposition to get the proper smog equipment, to get it up to spec, to get it titled, get it registered. It's kind of a pain. So most people here in California, they just title them somewhere else. In fact, I think this one says, like, you know what, just title it. I think at the end, they're like, don't even bother trying to get this here. You got to get it titled somewhere else, you know. But, you know, seemed to be a pretty decent looking car. So, yeah, my pick. What do you guys got?
That's a nice find. And let me just say really quick, I love that because you would go into a car show and, you know, even at Redwood, and you would see it at a glance and be like, oh, that's kind of neat. But it's one of those things where you get close and you realize, This isn't just a Rev. This is very different. Yeah, I love that sort of sneaky aspect. I love everything about that. Bruce, who's going next? You or me?
I'll go next.
You make the call. Okay.
To find something truly interesting, I had to bend the rules a bit. So I know we usually say it has to be within regular driving distance for you.
A day's drive.
Right. This one is pushing that to the absolute limits, but it is so cool.
If we pick the same car, damn it. All right, go ahead.
Right. I found
it better not be a Mitsubishi.
It's not. Although we might have found my backup choice might be the same car.
Okay.
I found a 1995 Toyota Crown Taxi.
Runs
on LPG, which is light petroleum gas, which is essentially a combination of propane and butane.
Mm-hmm.
And it's a real taxi. Oh, by the way, it has, let me get the mileage right.
Look at that color.
130,000 miles on it.
Look at that color.
And it's a stick?
It is a stick. It is
wild.
A on the column. It's not even a three on the tree. It's a four on the tree.
Wow. On the tree manual.
Everywhere. It's just a land of doilies.
Where is it at?
Have a floor. I don't know if maybe that's a Japanese taxi thing. I don't know. Weird. But there you can see to release the rear door to let your passenger out. There's the LPG tank. And jeez. Let me get to there it is on the
column.
So one
nice.
Two, three.
Wow. Second and reverse look like they're scarily close.
This is like quirks upon quirks upon quirks, this car.
Noticed this.
Oh my god,
it's got
even
like
more.
A gold wing top.
But the rear doors are the door opens to the side and then a gold opens to the top.
Wild.
Yeah.
I'm not even gonna go next. You win. You win. Yeah. There's nothing. No, and this is amazing.
$6,000. So I am well within the price range.
Where is it? Go get it.
It's in Georgia. It's at the very, very, very northern tip of Georgia.
Okay. Yeah. That's more than a day's drive for me, but you could get there.
So it has one gold wing door, one gold wing, right?
Correct. And it's a semi gold wing door. Cause it still has a conventional door.
Now, when you when you pull that handle, do both doors open?
I have no idea.
So wild. I've never even heard of this. This is amazing.
Yeah, this is fantastic. It looks like it's just the one door, yeah.
Yeah, it's just the one door. Huh. Which I guess that would be the passenger side, which that would make sense because that's where you would be picking up.
Oh, but you know what that means? You could put it in an ejector seat.
Yeah.
Yes, or you can just put a button back there and tell people that it's in there and just don't bug me or I'm going to push the eject button. And if you don't believe me, look above your head.
Yeah, I hadn't noticed that until just now that the upper part of the door opens. Huh. And I just love the doilies on the seats, on the headrest, everywhere.
I've seen a few Japanese imports that have that motif going on.
Yes, that's apparently a thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that is a sign of luxury, as I understand. Yeah. Like, if you ever see like a Toyota, there's a couple Toyota Centuries.
Yep,
at I've Radwood, seen them. Which are like the de facto cool limo. And yeah, the really nice ones, they're not, and they don't like leather either. It's not leather seats. Right. It is like a cloth or a wool,
yep,
or something. And with the doilies heard, on top. Yeah.
And maybe this is apocryphal. If we have any Japanese listeners, let me know. What I had heard is that since luxurious men's suits are made out of wool, they felt that seats to be luxurious should also have wool covering. That is what I've heard, at least.
Also, what I've heard is that the purpose of the doilies is that you can remove them and clean and wash them.
Yep.
Which is like actually great.
Yeah, it's a good idea.
Yep. And I wasn't sure if you were going to nail me on this since it was a 95 and you're going to say, oh, that's not Radwood appropriate. But I
it totally is.
I did an extra bit of research. So this is an eighth generation Toyota Crown, and they were in production from 1987 until 1999. And there were two other generations of Crown that came out at the same time, but these were so popular as like taxis and stuff like that. They were in production for over a decade. So this has its roots in the 80s, even if it's a 95 model.
No, that you win. You win this contest. You win the next Radwood. You win.
Okay.
You win. Well, Smith,
I want to see if you pick my backup pick.
I probably did. Is it the 1998 Mitsubishi Flying Pug Pajero Jr.?
I saw that one, but no, it's not that one.
It's not this one. Okay, so
it's not that one.
It's in Pennsylvania. It's a day's drive for me. It's 87,000 miles. It's $9,995.
Let the people see the grill, because that's what makes this car. Yeah, there you go.
What?
At first I was like, okay, what is this, like some weird caricature of a Pajero? No, wow. I did a little bit of research on this. It is the Pajero Junior Flying Pug Limited Edition. It's a real thing. They made like 130 of them. I don't know how and by what measure this one got imported to the United States, but it's in Pennsylvania. It's advertised as running good. Only 139 were ever made. I love it. It says Black Friday special. Apparently it wasn't special enough because it's still for sale. Let me just kind of scroll through some of the pictures. I mean, it's a Pajero Junior. So, a little off-roader, for those listening on audio, it has the face of like a 1930s Auburn.
Yes.
It's so bizarre because the front end does not match the rest of the car at all. It's like
a bit
round, and the fenders too are sort of 30s-ish. But then the rest of the car is so 80s square. It's bizarre.
It's 80s square with like this weird 30s architecture going on. It is right-hand drive, automatic. It doesn't list stats here in the ad, but I did a little bit of research, and I believe these have just a little 1 liter engine making about 80 horsepower. As I read this one, it looks good all around. It's ugly. I'm just going to say it's ugly. I don't like the way it looks, but I love its individuality. You will never, I know you're not supposed to say never. Yeah, I'm saying it. You will never see another one of these around. Yeah. And I love the little skulls in the headlights. I'm assuming that's an aftermarket change, but
that is ridiculous. So someone put, that's definitely not of the era. What I think is funny is that somebody bought this car and then felt, you know what? I don't, this bright purple thing with this weird face, and was like, you know what? I wish it was manlier. So I'm going to put these stupid LED lights with angry skulls.
With angry skulls in them.
And now I feel like a man driving this. It's like, what? Come on now. This is uncalled for.
And I mean, can we just call out the Mitsubishi hood ornament in the style of a Mercedes?
That's great.
I mean, yeah, there's everything and nothing that I love about this car at the same time. Just under 10 grand. I enjoyed that so much, Bruce. I found a 93 Legacy wagon that was well under the price limit.
Oh, I found that one too.
I had it in Iowa.
I had, maybe not.
I had a 90 Legacy wagon that I adored, but literally rusted apart on me. The rear strut towers literally broke away, and the suspension was held in place by the rear seats. That's how rusty it was. Well, this one was clean, and it looked like it had some maintenance, but it wasn't perfect. But I was like, oh, I want that. And then I found this thing, and it's like, if I'm going to Radwood, I'm taking the Mitsubishi. I'm taking the bonkers Mitsubishi.
So real quick, because we were talking about it, let me show you my backup, which is also a Mitsubishi. It is also a Pajero. Mine is a Pajero Mini, though. $7,500, located in Illinois, which actually is drivable. It just wasn't as cool as the Toyota taxi. But still, very cool, right-hand drive, you That'd know, little tiny off-roader.
Isn't it funny that we all sort of gravitated towards, assuming your backup accounts, towards those small, you know, SUVs that we just, they don't sell them anymore. You know, the small two-door SUVs that were kind of the rage in the 90s. My mom had a 91 Sidekick, you know, and they don't make them anymore. It's kind of sad. They're so fun. And then, but a lot of those, by the way, being from Iowa, I can tell you that we saw a lot of right-hand drive Subaru wagons being used as mail cars, as post office cars, because they needed to work during the winter where it was snowy. But yet, if it's right-hand drive, you're lined up perfectly to put the mail in, and it's a wagon, so you have all the space for the mail. So that might have been what this one was. Well, that kind of looks like a turbo or something. I don't know.
It's not, though. The ad says, and we're looking at it now, 93 Subaru Legacy wagon. The ad says it was from New Mexico and is completely rust-free. It actually does look pretty clean. It looks like it may have been painted. I mean, it's not perfect, but I mean, it's got the big wing on the back. It's got gold wheels because Subaru. It's right-hand drive. There's a lot that the ad didn't really go into detail on other than, you know, it's a right-hand drive and it's from New Mexico, so no rust. And they're asking $6,000. So, I mean, it's easily within the limit. You don't see many of these first-gen Legacy wagons left anymore. They did have some slight rust issues. So it's rare to see a clean one. That just looks like a great foundation to do a nice little turbo swap and just have so much fun. Mm-hmm. But Bruce, no, you win. Oh my God. You win.
Well, thank you. But everyone, that's going to be our show for tonight. Brad, I want to give you the chance. You obviously have your YouTube channel, you have your Instagram, you have all that stuff. Promote away. What are you doing? What do you got coming up? This is your chance. Promote yourself.
Sure. I think the main thing is to see whatever I'm up to, go to my Instagram, which is at Brad Hansen Media. That's Hansen with an E. And you'll see whatever we're up to there. And then, you know, every so often I put up a YouTube video on my Retro Cars Forever YouTube channel. Follow me if you'd like.
Very good.
Well, we're super happy to have you back. Yeah. Obviously, the invite is like just universally open. Come back anytime.
Thanks. It's always a pleasure.
Yeah. No, this felt like we were talking for 15 minutes and we've been talking for an hour and 20 minutes.
Yeah.
And, like, I could keep talking to you. So, yeah, this was a fun one. I hope all the audience enjoyed it. As always, we appreciate you. We understand there's a million and one things you could be doing, but you decide to spend time with us and we appreciate that. Without further ado, I think good morning, good afternoon, good evening, or good night. Thank you so much for spending time with us, and we will be seeing you next week. So bye-bye, everybody.
Bye. We'll see you.